case has been stated and our case has been made. In every home, to every individual in every part of our wide land, full opportunity has been given to hear that case and to render honest judgment on Tuesday next. From the time that my airplane touched the ground in Chicago, up to the present day, I have consistently set forth the doctrine of the present-day democracy of the United States. And it is the program of our party, dedicated to the conviction that every one of our people is entitled to the opportunity to earn a living, to develop himself to the fullest measure, consistent with the rights of his fellow men. You are familiar with that program. You are aware that it has found favor in the sight of the American electorate. That movement comes not from the leaders of any group, of any faction, or even of any party. It is the spontaneous expression of the aspirations of millions of individual men and women. Those hopes, those ambitions, have struggled for realization in different ways on farms, in cities, in the factories, among businessmen, and especially in the homes of the nation. These have found at length a common meeting ground in the Democratic program. And tonight, we are here to set the seal upon that program. After Tuesday, we go forward to the great task of its accomplishment, and I trust to its fulfillment. There can be only one great principle to guide our course in the coming years. We have learned the lesson that extravagant advantage for the few ultimately depresses the many. And to our course, we have seen how, as the foundations of the false structure are undermined, all come down together. So we must put behind us the idea that an uncontrolled, unbalanced economy, creating paper profits for a relatively small group, means or ever can mean true prosperity. And I am mindful that exactly 4 years ago, on a similar occasion to this, the Democratic Party, in closing its campaign, stigmatized the condition then called prosperity in truly prophetic language with the label false prosperity. And you know now, and America knows now, the justice of that label. The reasoning then was as simple as the analysis is today. While the families on our farms are in want, there can be no safety for the families of the workers in our cities. Confident in the sinew and fiber of American life, we know nevertheless that our losses are not beyond repair. We know that we can apply to the great structure that we have built our power of organization, our fertility of mind, and the intelligence and the foresight needed to make that structure more serviceable. We refuse to be oppressed by baseless fears, fears that our firesides are to become cold, that our civilization will disappear. We know that by the united effort of all, our fear can be dissipated, our firesides can be protected. Our economic fabric can be reconstituted and our individual lives brought to more perfect fulfillment. In that united effort, I make bold to include not only you, the members of my own party, not only the great independent masses who seek relief from an administration that has served them ill, not only the liberal-minded elements in all parts of the country who have joined in creating the program that we are proud to offer, but also the men and the women in the ranks of the Republican Party whose interests must also be ours. For my friends, the next administration must represent not a fraction of the United States, but all of the United States. No resource of heart or of mind or of organization can be excluded in the fight against what is, after all, our real enemy. And those real enemies are hunger, want, insecurity, poverty, and fear. Against these, there is no glory in a victory that is only partisan. This genius of America is stronger than any candidate or any party. This campaign, hard as it has been, has fortunately not shattered either my sense of humor or my sense of proportion. I still know that the fate of America cannot depend on any one man. For the greatness of America is founded in principles and not on any single personality. And I, for one, shall remember that even when I'm president. It seems to me that unless by victory we can accomplish a greater unity toward liberal effort, we shall have done little indeed. Let me turn from the consideration of leadership and think of the loyal voters who constitute the great army that has brought us to the gate of victory. Let us give thought to the men and to the women in the ranks. There are millions of them. What have they in mind? Why have they enlisted in our cause? There is among you the man who is not bound by party lines. You vote according to your common sense and your calm judgment after hearing each party set forth its program. For you, that woman's place is in the home has a wider meaning today. Your interests may be in your home. But you now know that they are no longer disassociated from the interests of the state itself. Into your home, for instance, comes, what shall I say, electricity. What you pay for it is largely determined by the attitude of your government. Your family budget must provide for a tax bill as well as for the baby's clothes. And you know now that your baby's clothes are apt to depend on the amount of taxes your family pays. You have had the clarity of vision to trace many of your private problems back to their roots in government policy. You who have had that vision best appreciate the program that we lay before you. And there is among you the man in business or in trade who has heard the cry that change is a fearful thing, but who, unafraid, has decided to change. You know now that when things are going wrong, only partisan prejudice and stupidity and fear can countenance a continuance. You know now that the logical remedy for mistaken policy is a change in policy. And that is why you have decided to put the conduct of your affairs in other hands. All of you, consciously or not, have helped to shape the policies of the Democratic Party in this its war on human suffering. Your own experiences, your own fears, and your own problems all have written themselves into our program. There is something of you in all of us. And there is among you the man who has been brought up in the good American tradition to work hard and to save for a rainy day. You have worked hard. You have stinted yourself to save. You now find your savings gone. You now find your job gone. Your resentment comes not from discontent alone, but from a feeling of deep injustice. You have joined us not because of discontent, but because in our program you find the hope that this cannot and shall not come again. And remember that we have not enticed you with offers of magic nor lured you with vain promises. We have given you the hope of a better ordered system of national economy. And we have pledged you our word and our will to do. And then there is the man among you who has been brought up to believe that a livelihood could always be wrung from the soil by willing labor. You have broken your back in your efforts to make the soil produce. And when you have gathered your harvest, you have found that harvest worthless. In bewilderment, you have learned that when you had something to sell, the price was low. See you a mobilization of the resources of government to bring to you the fruit which your labor deserves. And finally, there is among you the man who has been able to save something from this wreck. You have joined our ranks because you too have come to understand the falsity of the 1928 economics and to look to your safety in a new and stronger philosophy of American constitutional government. All of you, all of us, in all places, in all walks of life, have joined in proving that only by a true conception of the interdependence of the American economic system can there be hope of safety and security for all. Today there appears once more the old truth taught 2,000 years ago, that no man lives unto himself and no man dies to himself. But living or dying, we are the lords and each other's. it may be said, when the history of the past few months comes to be written, that this was a bitter campaign. I prefer to remember it only as a hard-fought campaign. For there can be no bitterness where the sole thought is the welfare of the United States of America. It is with this spirit, my friends, and in this spirit, that I close the campaign of 1932. I believe that the best interests of the nation require a change in administration. Every sign points to that. Yes, every sign points to that change. But I would have you realize that the strength of the country is the strength of union. Let us restore that strength. It was said at the close of the World War that America had come of age. After that war, we Americans had a unique opportunity to build permanently for our country. That opportunity we did not grasp. But even in our mistakes, we have learned how strength can best be used to the common benefit of all. The millions of unchronicled heroes in every part of the land who by self-denial and by patience have carried this nation through this economic crisis give us new hope. We can, we will bring to the problem of the individual the maturity of the united effort of a nation that has come of age. America, mature in its power, united in its purpose, high in its faith, America can come, America will come to better days.